at you, looking at the other places and the photographs of somewhere.
Yeah, go ahead. Ready? Go. Wait. One, two, three, launch.
Hi, I'm Eric Nakamura. We're at the Giant Robot Garage to do a podcast with Mr. Bo Sia, who's making some great sound effects.
I'm doing Foley, y'all.
Foley. There's a footstep. Can you do that? Yeah. Footsteps. Oh, there you go. All right. Awesome.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
4 years of school. NYU, dude.
4 years of school. Oh, that's right. NYU. You're an East Coaster.
Well, I moved to the East Coast when I went to NYU. I'm actually from Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right. I guess a lot of people might know you from, I guess, the quick primer or primer is the Rosie O'Donnell video.
Oh, for sure. A lot of people saw that video.
That became a YouTube viral kind of a thing because I think it was not too long, but it was pretty hard hitting and it made this Ching Chong kind of issue sort of kind of level off. I mean, she should thank you, actually.
Oh, I think also it was timing of when that occurred, and also her response to it. The fact that she actually responded to the video was great, too. You know, she was very, I was very shocked because she was so receptive to what I had to say, and rather than be threatened by it, she chose to really listen to what I was trying to convey, and I felt like she found it in herself, in her response, you know? That, you know, deep down, it's not actually about Ching Chong, right? It's about all of us, due to ignorance, receive a lot of things like that from other people. And we have to, in our experience, try to show them that, you know, it's not really doing you any good. It's not helping. It's more harmful than anything to do that to people.
You know. But I thought, when I saw it, though, I was like, first off, you had the different haircut, your old haircut, I guess.
Y'all.
Yeah, explain that. What is that? That's like the wide mohawk.
Fauxhawk, they say.
Was that a fauxhawk, though?
At the point, I don't know. You know, people have terms. I don't know what things mean anymore.
You were really shaved on the sides on those, though, weren't you?
For sure. Yeah. My mom's a hairstylist on the side. So ever since I was young, I always had different haircuts.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of the thing I like.
I think that was part of it, though, was this, like, kind of, this mohawk. I saw it, I was like, oh, shit. This mohawk man is, like, you know, kind of... Talking kind of like, I don't know, dropping knowledge about the whole Rosie bit, you know what I mean? I thought that was kind of, it's just a, you know, a lot of people probably have never seen you before, so that's how you came at them for the first time.
Right.
Interesting.
No, I can imagine that being a little bit jarring if your only exposure to, like, the Asian American voice, the Asian American experience is kind of what you see on mainstream television and stuff like that, you know.
That definitely hit the southern states. I'm sure a lot of southerners had seen that as a result. You know what I mean?
Maybe. We'll pray for it.
Yeah. That was awesome. But yeah, so I thought that was really cool. What kind of came out of that, though, besides the Rosie texting? Was it texting or Twittering or responding anyway? Saying sorry.
Right.
What did anything else come out of that, maybe down the road, that you didn't expect?
Yeah, I didn't expect the level of compliment or criticism to be so narrowly focused on the exact thing I was saying in there. So, you know, the whole Ching Chong thing, though it's the most obvious part of the text or the content, I found it really interesting that a lot of people fixed solely on that and not on the thing I really wanted to share, which was the idea of our shared ignorance and our shared responsibility to educate each other about our ignorance and to learn from that, you know, to be free of it instead of in denial of it, you know, so.
But hasn't that happened, like, over the many years of you doing kind of writing, poetry, performing? Doesn't that come out of it a lot, where someone takes something really minute that you never expected would be the important thing, or that, you know, to become important?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's jarring, right? Because as a writer, you think, oh, I want to share this, I want to connect to them in this way, I want to convey these things, and you realize you may be doing that, and to what degree you can't be sure, but more than anything, you can't control the other person's experience. You can't control how they interpret things, you can't control the context of their life meeting your work, you know? So that's always been a surprise. And, you know, the overall lesson at this point in my life is that I can't control it, but I can listen to where they're coming from to try and improve my ability to make that connection, you know.
Yeah, at the same time, we would do the same. We'd write articles, you know, work really hard on them, write about something what we thought was important, and then the little fart joke became the hit.
Right.
And it's like, oh, man, you know, or, you know what I mean? It was just like that all the time. We'd be like, wow, that's what they responded most to, was this little tiny one-sentence passage that was practically hidden, but the main message was completely lost.
Right, yeah.
Oh, no.
Because it's hard, right? Because they're going to... Anybody is, even myself, right? I'll read something and I'll sometimes have to step back from what immediately gets my emotional gut reacting to it. I always have to step back and say, where was this writer at when he wrote this or she wrote this? What are they really trying to say? Why are they using this structure? Why is this one line making me either so upset or so overjoyed? And why is it, am I focusing on this over everything else? What is its place in the overall piece? So, yeah. I could ramble on forever on that shit. I mean, you know, it makes it exciting, right? It makes it exciting that none of us get to a point where we're like, everything we share is perfect. You know, because as we have the internet, as we have the ability for more and more people to have access to our work for free, we're getting an understanding that all of those people come from different realities. And as I'm receiving more of these comments and more of these criticisms and more of these compliments on my work, I'm getting a better sense of either how to reach more people or how to really focus more deeply on what I believe in the face of other people's reactions. You know, because it's really hard, right? You feed into, for instance, with Giant Robot, right? If all you did was fed into the criticism of the magazine, you'd lose your core beliefs. But those are those people's real criticisms, real concerns. And that's an exciting balance, right?
Yeah. So do you listen to the criticisms that you get?
I don't take them as personal as I used to. You know, I used to really take it really like, what? You know, because some of it is very aggressive and very destructive and seemingly very just not wanting, very dismissive of anything about me. And so, you know, at this point, I try to think more, what type of person would write this? What would your reality have to be like that this is how you respond to things, or this is the level with which you can receive work, you know? And if I'm ever being unclear to you, you can just be like, dude, you're totally confusing.
No,
you sound fucking vague.
Or, like, or you sound really great, but I don't know what you're saying.
Any of those, because, you know, okay. I have a big problem with people maybe feeling that I'm vague, but in reality, I don't want to be fixed on a specific example
for, sure.
You know, the concern is that you'll get hung up on the example and not the concept. Oh,
but that's
the lesson.
That's the exact problem we're discussing, or the exact things that kind of happen. Though,
right.
I'm like listening for some little detail and then you're kind of explaining a world of a story, you know, or a suggestion.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No, that's normal, but no, I'm listening.
Yeah, no, I just want to make sure that you don't feel like you have to nod ever. Like, you never feel like you have to nod because we're two different people, man. And here we are, as much as we've known each other, we're still trying to navigate how our conversation is going to be and how we really understand each other, you know?
So, I'm going to nod no this time. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, it's all good. No, I completely understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one thing, too, I guess, I think you've once mentioned it, maybe in passing, and I don't even know if it's nice to repeat it, but...
Oh, good.
Uh-oh,
this
danger.
Is great. What a great beginning to that.
Danger. No. But yeah, you kind of mentioned, you once said something about, oh, people know me from my work 10 years ago.
How do I feel about someone seeing me and expecting what I did in 2000?
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, first.
Well, I feel that's natural, right? A, I feel like if they've only been exposed to what I've done in 2000, what's to make them believe anything has changed? You know, what's to make them believe that I've grown in this way or that way, or that I'm exploring this thing or that thing? And, you know, for me, I just feel like if people have to hold on to that expectation after experiencing or I share my new work, you know, that's their choice. You know, there's nothing I can do about that. There's some of my own emotional expectations that I still am working on, that I have to learn to let go of anytime I see people that I have a really fixed idea of who they are. You know, and that's been a learning process for me too, is to not be so hard on people's expectations, but use it as a reminder to work on my own. As far as, you know, wanting me to do that work or how I feel about that work, I feel like it's kind of great that it's on video. It's kind of great that it's written down, because it shows a very honest time in my life where I was able to share where I was honestly at that point. And some people may be just there now. They may have been there at the time that I wrote it. They may have been there 30 years before I wrote it. They may be there 10 years from now. Right? I can't decide. So it's good that the work's out there, because at any point in our lives, who knows when we're going to face this thing or that thing. Meaning, maybe in my 20s, I was dealing with, you know, how to party better. And then maybe in my 30s, I'm considering the interdependence of the universe, you know? But maybe someone wants to learn how to party better in their 40s. Or in their teens. Maybe someone's learning the interdependence of the universe at the age of 5. Right. One could not say, right? So,
because I know that when I watch your videos now, I don't think you're as angry, right? Or what appears to be angry, anyway. And at least how you perform it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you have to imagine a child in Oklahoma growing up in the 80s of Asian descent, who, for whatever reasons, felt that in his environment there were certain things that were not acceptable for him to share or address, and may not have felt particularly safe or comfortable sharing those things in his world. And all of those years of silence, whether it came from the family, the overall environment, the geography, whatever it was, there was all those years of silence. And from that silence, because of that, feeling that, you know, invisible, without a voice. So the kid finally gets on stage, finally has a chance to have his voice, has the protection of the fourth wall because he's on stage, and suddenly that unleashing of all that silence brings on top of the work this other layer of intensity that comes from, I will finally be heard. You will finally know my voice. So after doing thousands of shows in many years, that layer of intensity is no longer there. And now the intensity of that level will only come if the story or the thing I'm trying to share needs to reflect that.
So how much of it is like what's really your emotion versus what's showmanship?
Good call. Well, I think in the creation process, purely 100% raw gut, you know, that's when it's really creative. When I intellectualize what I'm creating, it generally falls pretty flat. When I come from it raw, from the gut, it's generally all my emotion and things. In the performance, in the beginning performances, as I'm figuring it out, there's all kinds of things going on. But once I really understand the work I've written and understand it in my body and all that stuff, the sharing of it to others is less personal. Because it's about, it's cool, man. People know what lawnmowers are.
Kind of loud, though.
Lawnmower background is one of the hottest sounds in podcasts these days. Like, people just trying to, like, replicate that shit. It's much better when you have an au naturel that's kind of fading in and out.
See what happens.
Yeah.
It gets louder, though.
Yeah. It's fine. I'll just project more. But, the thing is, you know, you do the work, and then at some point you have to let it go. Like, at some point, a poem like, I got this poem, and, you know, the really known line from it, right, is, the Asians are coming.
Yep.
You know, at some time, that was a point for me to let people know, like, dudes, don't you get it? This is where I'm coming from. But eventually it became like, for you that may like not know this and be wondering if you're crazy for feeling it, I am helping affirm that feeling. Or, you know, the ownership for me is no longer there. It's kind of letting go. You let it go. It no longer belongs to you, which is so crazy, right? It's like, it's so zenned out and things, but at some point you can't hold on to it personally or you'll be trapped in time. You'll be trapped in trying to always live in that emotional reality.
Right.
You know, and you got to sort of fight the fact that people will celebrate you if you can stay emotionally there. But that's hard because with regards to humanity, if you don't keep growing and evolving as a human being, especially emotionally, especially mentally, you go crazy.
Years ago, I always thought, oh, the easiest transition for you is just to become, like, if you're not, you know, if because I don't know how big poetry really is as a career choice.
Not a million-dollar maker
but
for most.
I thought, man, you're going to get into hip-hop. That looked like such a easy transition or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, my life's not over, you know? And I do feel like as I continue to explore language and communication through the arts, it'll be inevitable that I go there. I just don't know how right now. Like, I've been studying it for a very long time. I've really worked to understand the history and the cultural reality of how hip-hop came about and its place in culture now and the use of that kind of voice with music. But as far as my own work and my own tracks and things like that, I think that will come, but I just don't know when or how.
So you do think it's going to come?
I know it will. I know, because I'm always studying hip-hop for a reason, not just to... I mean, granted, because it's such a global force right now for so many reasons, I also study it on that level, you know? But as an artist, I find myself wanting to do that because it's another challenge. It's another challenge in language. And I guess at this point, it's not enough for me to write a three-act, three-minute poem that's used primarily for poetry slams, because I've already had enough years of that and I kind of want to explore other things.
So what is the transition, I guess, in terms of like writing poetry versus those being lyrics?
Now for me, what that would mean for me personally would mean considering the lyrics from a tone, from a musical standpoint, more than an intellectual one. So, for instance, if I wanted to convey an idea of partying at the club, which is a very rare thing, I don't think anyone has made a club party song in at least 20 years in hip-hop, which is good, because then I want to be the first. Don't say anything. I just want you to listen to me right now that I believe no one's done a party club song in 20 years and I will be the first. But in saying that, you know, the thing is... I couldn't write that song, like, from a standpoint of details. Because when you're in the club, and you're partying, you got those hormones going, and you got that need to move your body happening, and it's about experience of physical bodies. So then the lyrics have to reflect that experience, because that's the context in which that song will be most listened to. You know? No one's going to go to a club and want to dance and hear a beat, and then hear someone intellectualize what's going on. Right?
So, okay, yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, you gotta think about...
But some hip-hop was kind of that way to begin with, though. It was, like, meant to be intellectual and wasn't
sure.
A dance song, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think that those kinds of songs, it's important for the artists, and I'm not sure because I haven't interviewed many of them at all and haven't had personal conversations with a lot of them, but I think in general it's important for artists to think about why? Why am I being intellectual? What's the story that needs this to be like a very mental understanding more than a physical understanding or physical response, you know? Like, it's important for us to consider those things as artists, right?
So yeah. Do you freestyle rap or whatever?
Yeah.
Do you kind of do that kind of stuff anywhere?
Sure. No, yeah. I mean, you know, I had this year where I was like really concerned that I would be in a battle and be shamed for some reason. For some reason, I got it in my head. Someone's going to battle me, and if I'm not prepared, I will be embarrassed. So I spent a year just trying to learn the basic mechanics of freestyling and thinking about what my freestyle strengths and weaknesses were. And then also, And then right now, I don't do any, like, freestyling in that way, but I definitely am working on how do you make up a poem on stage? How do you freestyle an entire poem? An arrhythmic piece.
Can you do that?
Yeah. Something I'm working on. Getting, but unfortunately, you can't theorize that, because I'm of the belief that for me, what I want to do to freestyle a poem is to become a better listener of where the audience is at, so that poem reflects where they're at. Because I want the poem I make up to not come from my ego or my insecurity, but from an understanding of where the audience is at.
Doesn't it kind of marry both, no matter what?
Right, you can't be perfect, for sure. But I definitely, yeah, I just don't want to be focused on one, or have one be exclusive. So I think that's actually important for you to know, because, right, you're reminding me that I can't get so high and mighty that's all I'm doing, that I do have to acknowledge that I have my own work that I'm still going on that will find itself in the process.
It's pretty good.
I like that. And I know you intended to do that, so.
No, cool. I did not. So what, tell me about this, like, freestyle battling thing. I mean, where does paranoia come from? And,
well,
also you mentioned strengths and weaknesses. What were the weaknesses, I guess? I could see strengths probably being able to talk major shit and put somebody down. I bet you could do it if you wanted to. It's kind of mean, but, you know, that's part of the culture, right?
No, I mean, as far as the dissing others aspect of battles goes, I learned that in junior high, sort of the hard way that most people would learn that, which is everyone kind of in your circle making fun of you because you're the weak link in the social group, and then you learn how to create really high defense mechanisms of putting other people down so they're too intimidated to come at you.
Right.
So I definitely could probably put people down if I want, and I have in the past. And so that's definitely a strength of mine, but it doesn't come from, like, anything other than that period in my junior high life. I think another strength of mine is the ability to not go to common topics, right? Common topics of external wealth, topics of validation because of the physical presence or how people respond to me. You know, I might address different things that will also confuse an opponent, because they're not programmed to respond to anything but I'm richer. No, I'm actually richer. No, I'm actually doper at flowing. No, I'm doper at flowing. Which is general back and forth. A weakness would be I always do this you know, or I know, right? Like, you know, you're gonna get caught up, and then you know, and I just keep repeating it because it's like a crutch I reach back for to start the next line. So that's a weakness that I have to work out, not going there to find the next point. Another weakness would be trying to think of a clever thing as I'm freestyling. It's such a bad move. Essentially, you have all the tools within you. The main thing to work on if you're freestyling, if anyone is totally curious about that from the standpoint of someone who doesn't know what he's talking about, is to give yourself permission and trust yourself that the material is there and to let it come out. You know.
No, I like hearing it because it's from probably a different perspective, but I know that you hang out with a lot of MCs, or at least sometimes.
I have. Yeah. I mean, I've, shockingly, for as emo as many people might call me throughout my life, I've definitely been around a lot of MCs. I've been very fortunate to spend a lot of personal time with MCs and just listen to how their brains work and how they talk about music and stuff.
Do their brains work well, or is it just kind of a lot of them have the natural gift of
different. It's different, right? That some MCs are more a vessel, literally more of a vessel for something beyond them.
Right.
Other MCs are very consciously aware of what their choices are at every turn, but that reveals in their writing over focus on awareness of what they're doing. Right. And sometimes the story suffers in the face of the MC's awareness. You know? Yeah. So yeah, they're all different. I mean, just like I write differently than my peers in poetry, which is why it's difficult to ask people like, you know, how do you write a poem? Because essentially, it's not how does one write a poem so that everyone can write a poem that way. It's who am I? And then how do you write a poem, you know?
So was this kind of whole experience of the slam poetry and I guess the mm-hmm. film, you know, that's now, what year? I don't even know. It must be like close to 10 years. A decade ago?
The documentary or the narrative?
Yeah, the documentary.
The documentary is 98.
98, so it's more than 10 years ago.
Holy moly!
Yeah, it's more than 10 years ago. That said, do you think that momentum actually got larger or do you think it actually got smaller from that time period?
You mean the world of poetry slam grew sure. from that?
Yeah, and then yourself with that or within that.
After the documentary came out in 98 and the narrative film in 98 also was out, I would say that poetry slam grew a lot. The world, the number of cities, the number of participants, because the exposure that most people could experience didn't require a physical poetry slam to occur in your city. You had the opportunity to actually see it first on TV, a much cheaper form, and you could develop your own. And it inspired a lot of people to then start participating in poetry slams and stuff. Granted, there wasn't the same access as the internet, which has changed it to a whole other scale at this point. But in 98, it definitely, the world of it grew. And at that time, I was still really deeply immersed in the world of poetry slams. So who I was in that world also grew in different ways. As far as my artistry and my ability level, it grew, but it was more like an escalation of what I was already working on, not more an exploration of how I can get more depth. Meaning, for instance, you know, in 96, 97, the poems I were writing had a certain type of humor and a certain type of stream of consciousness. By 99, 2000, I had taken that to another level, but I yet to develop vulnerability. Do you know what I'm saying? So I escalated one thing, but other aspects of who I was as an artist and a person did not grow.
I see.
Yeah, and my status grew in the community, but also in both positively and negatively. So
the vulnerability part, are you talking about, is that kind of like a just kind of a perception? In terms of, like, your work?
I think when your fear and your insecurity rules you and you don't have, you weren't taught as a child how to have healthy uses of your anger, you run the risk of, you know, me going further than that. I actually had to stop going down that road because I was becoming a danger to myself. You know, feeding that anger forever just for the sake of being celebrated for an anger that maybe others are not at a point that they can even express yet. And then therefore you become the physical manifestation of expression of anger for other people. Like to live in that and be stuck there could be really harmful to a person. So yeah, I mean, for me, I would say I was pretty dangerous. You know, you talk about never having an outlet and then suddenly releasing it all at once, that can be very dangerous if you don't know how to, like, really manage it emotionally. Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
I'm dangerous still.
Yeah.
I'm in a different way dangerous, you know?
Oh, that's what I say too, but I'm
well, you know, it's, you know, a guy yelling on stage seems dangerous, but it's more barking. I mean, the most dangerous individual is a whole different type of person.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of danger is a wild reaction to stimuli danger. That's the danger of, like, oh, I've been repressing things for years, so you don't know when I might act out on you. You know, that's like a different kind of danger, the unpredictable explosion kind of thing.
The one that Asians are very known for, though, very dangerous.
Well, you know, we're considered dangerous because of many historical representations, you know. Of which, you know, I don't feel I had a hand in.
Also, well, another thing I think about comedy seems like there's also this angle of poetry in it, or vice versa. When I see your performances, sometimes I think there was comedy, like a possible segue into being a comedian, right?
Yeah.
And I see comedians where I think, is that, that's almost like the poetry that I saw.
Yeah.
Is there supposed to be any kind of crossover there, or is it still completely separate? Like, well, do some poets go to comedy?
And, oh, yeah.
Completely.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Okay. I mean, there are comedians that mock poetry now, which is hilarious. And, you know, hilarious, if you can hear my tone. And then there are poets who do, you know, because of the style of their spoken word being so conversational, do branch out into stand-up, right? Because there's a much larger market for that. And sometimes because they do are known for their comedic work, they may feel more embraced or accepted in those arenas, or comfortable even, right? And because sometimes the expectation at a poetry reading can be one of somberness, seriousness, you know, even to address serious things in a comedic way might not be accepted in some places, not as a conscious intention, you just can feel that, so they might feel more comfortable going to a comedy club. But yeah, I mean, for myself, was there comedy before? Yeah, I mean, I grew up spending all my Saturday nights watching SNL, dreaming of being that guy one day, you know. We had cable television growing up as our babysitter, so, you know, I watched all those old HBO comedy hours and comedy shows. I just loved the state, you know, at the time, and Kids in the Hall, all those things. Like, I really, really influence my point of view.
For sure. Sometimes when I watch your comedy online, even if I see it in a comedy, God, look what I'm saying. Your poetry online.
Doesn't matter to me.
Now, when I see it online, even recent, I kind of equate it to almost like watching someone who does breakdancing in a way.
Oh, like, to you?
Yeah, I'm watching it. Like, that? I'm watching it going, whoa, whoa, whoa. But I'm not like laughing, but I'm more like saying, whoa. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I was very...
I don't know.
I was raised by really quick editing. You know, MTV really, you know, at a very young age, the editing game changed with the music video. And to some degree, I do feel like my ability to go from point to point comes from having been exposed to that preteen, that style of editing and that speed of processing. As far as, like, whoa, 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 I'm not sure.
That's me.
No, to me, all I know is that I'm just doing what feels like the level of intensity I want to approach a subject. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of just don't want to talk about a hot dog in the way that we understand hot dogs. You know, I don't want to even just make a hot dog into a spaceship or a phallic symbol. I don't want a hot dog to even be made out of different matter. You know, I'd rather be a hot dog turned into a story. How is that even fucking possible? You know, I want to kind of just go there. How is a hot dog a story in itself? Not the story of a hot dog. How is a hot dog a story in itself? That's kind of how, if I want to write a poem about a hot dog, I want to go, right? And you can apply that example to anything, right? If I want to talk about race, which I don't want to right now. You know, I'm not going to go with the things that we grew up with in school all the time and addressing my reaction to that. You know, it's,
but I think
there are other voices for that.
Yeah.
So many voices in the world.
But I think you're kind of, when I hear you, you're kind of talking in a much wider kind of a system. Maybe you're talking much wider for people to, A, either understand why they're happening or why things are happening, rather than like addressing the little kind of smaller details. The knowledge, where's it all coming from? Where's the root of these things? You know, instead of like putting a band-aid on a little cut, you're trying to figure out, well, let's fix the thing that made you that cut, you know?
Well, I think that's definitely what I've been taking in experientially for the last 10 years. So, you know, that's totally influenced me, right? If you're reading all these books and articles about the universal theory of everything, if you're reading about how, you know, everyone's talking about what is systemic change, what does that really mean? You know, in any realm, from politics to our health system to race, right? Like, any of those things, like, it just gets, because I've been fortunate enough to be someone letting me know about these types of books and articles and programs, I've been able to start considering that. And yeah, it's true. I don't really want you at the end of the show to have nodded at everything I said and felt like your work was done. I'd rather you actually don't nod at times, are extremely uncomfortable at times, and may even want to tell me to go fuck myself at home, you know, in your mind, as long as it gets you going to a deeper place about what I'm talking about, or what I'm trying to share. Because the nodding is not enough for some of the things I'm trying to address. If I ever write a poem about terminal illness or about disease pandemic, I really don't want people to be going like, yes, we totally shouldn't have disease pandemic. Like, I'd rather people go, is he really talking about my life? Is he trying to talk about my choices? What's wrong with my choices? Really? And then going home and starting to go down through that list over time. Like, are there choices that may be contributing to this possibly occurring? You know, because, damn, nodding is not enough. It's not enough of a release anymore. You know how they talk about a comic can be very therapeutic because it allows you that release of laughter, the ability to approach the serious without feeling like it's too threatening, right? But at some point, if you live in that reality only, you run the risk of being escapist. And you always have to check yourself and balance. Am I giving someone a therapeutic release to help them go further in being able to address this in their life? Or am I creating an avenue of escape so they never have to face this? Which is some of my issue with modern comedy now, is that is it really comedy or is it an escape? An escape that causes one to actually harm themselves in the long term. Did I say that?
So how do you feel about, like, you know, when you do think about these things?
I think too much.
Yeah, okay. That's where I was getting at.
Oh, God, my brain's hurting. Hurting myself here.
Does that get in the way of you actually producing work, making work? Because I know, like, it seems like there's a time when there was maybe a year where I'm like, I haven't seen anything. Like, what did he do this year? Or what is he working on?
Are you sure it's only 1 year?
It could be more.
Like eight,
but it just seemed like, you know, and then every time we would talk about it, I'm like, wow, this man is really thinking about something, or he's still developing an idea or developing something. And it takes time, but it felt like, yeah, I'm like, wow.
You know, writing a poem about, writing a poem about cancer for me is not enough to be like, cancer's whack and we should fight it. Great. Yay. I mean, we can agree on that, and I could write that in 20 minutes without a doubt. Three acts, have an arc, you'd be clapping at the end for sure. I'll put in some examples, things I heard, etc., etc. Great. But, you know, a lot of what we're talking about now, you know, actually takes a lot more time than I thought it did. Believe me, I'm super impatient. I'd rather do no work and just do it. Unfortunately, I've learned that when I do that, I'm not fully honoring the story or the subject matter I'm trying to write about. So I got to take that time. I got to work on that. And I also got to work on the part where my fear and insecurity finds itself in the text in a way that doesn't fit what the needs of the text are.
Oh my God.
Which is like a whole other practice, you know. And then, you know, it's not just thinking, you're practicing other things. You're thinking, oh, this is the long way to get there, but it's actually a shorter way, because if you keep telling yourself, I want to write a better story, you're just focused on that and not in the how. And the how oftentimes feels longer, but it's actually longer to be like, no, the next one will be better. Oh, the next one will be better. That mode of thinking has never gotten me as far as I wanted. You know?
You used to do that?
For sure. The idea of, like, I want to be an escalating level of impressiveness, an escalating level of geniusness, greatness, whatever the fucking external false thing is, I would do that. But then I was like, well, the things I want to do and share and talk about, you can't treat them like that. They're not about that. If all my poems were about my dick and shit, I could do that forever. I could always be like, bigger, more illusionary, more delusionary, whatever it is, I could do that. But you talk about understanding another human being. If you write that poem, you can't treat him that way. So you have to rethink so much in order to do it. And that's kind of what I want to do. So.
So what are you working on now?
I cannot tell you. But,
That was awesome. What was that?
I don't know.
Who said that again?
A product of caffeine. Yeah, you know, I will say this. One thing that I'm working on right now is understanding how all of our muscles work together and how in my own musculature there is stress and restriction caused by past emotional trauma. And I'm working on figuring out what exercises and what understandings of the body will allow me to process and evolve out of those places. So the project that comes out of that, not really something I can speak on, but that's something I'm definitely working on that makes a lot of people, not a lot of people, I mean, that's unfair to put it on the world, actually. I should take my own responsibility. But, you know, to be honest, there are times where it's difficult for my ego to feel like I'm not treated as importantly or responded to as quickly or responded to at all if I'm not doing a lot of things that are public. And that's hard because I get exhausted just thinking about, do I really have to be this public for people to call me back? But I have to put that ego part aside and remember, what's the point of always being public if what I'm putting out there reflects nothing of my belief or importance, but is only saying that I need your attention. Please pay attention to me. Because I feel like I've gone through enough years of being that person. Clearly, there's so much in my past you could say, oh, well, that deep down, that's about wanting attention. And that's just not really me anymore. It's hard. It's hard to not tell you what projects I'm working on. It's hard to not tell you something impressive right now in this podcast. It's hard to not say something that will make people call me and start wanting to work with me. But I kind of have to do that because what I'm doing right now is so... Where's the monetary gain that you can really see in what I'm doing right now? There is none. But I swear to God, once I understand this, whoa. You know.
The helicopter will drop a big load of gold bars in your backyard?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, there's many things about gold, and we don't want to talk about ancient aliens right now, but uh-huh. Another time we'll talk about right? that. But, yeah, maybe.
So, how do you pay the bills today or tomorrow?
I'm up and down, but I'm getting more consistent. The main way in which I pay the bills is still through my art. It's just sometimes I have really good stretches and sometimes I have really difficult periods where I have to, like, eat the same thing for 2 weeks. It's just what it is because I've yet to have the maturity to have a structure to be consistent and responsible with my money. And that's also an adult thing I'm trying to work on now.
Wait, how are you irresponsible with your money?
Because, you know, I'll get this check and I'll be like, oh, that's all mine. And forget that 30% of that is actually the government's and I have to pay that later. Or I'll get something and I'll pretend like, oh, this is what I get every month. But in reality, there's a couple months where it'll be a really dense amount of income that has to stretch for another 8 months post that income.
I see.
You know, and I haven't built into play either a consistent system, right, of things that will take care of me on a higher level of stability yet. That's all.
So you don't write material for other poets, for example, who go out and perform it like it's theirs? You don't do that kind of stuff?
Well, I think that's funny because... Who's to say that I don't? But, you know, you just got me thinking about people that are unaware of how much they take from others in order to feel valid. But that's okay. I don't mind. I'm really not an intellectual property douche. You know what I mean? Like, like intellectual property to me is like the new frontier, and I do not want to be Disney. I think that's the losing end of the battle, to be Disney, to extend copyright and to go after trademark and infringement to the nth degree. So, no, I, you know, people hire me to do shows. People hire me to write commission projects. People hire me to be in films for some reason, which I don't understand, but I am so grateful for. And thankfully, some of those avenues have residual income, and it's a matter of stacking more of that in regards to taking care of my financial needs.
So you're saying people have copied your work?
You know, when I was a kid, I loved Charles Bukowski so much that my first 300 poems I thought were me, but looking back were really his. But if I didn't love him so much and it didn't drive me to write that much, I would never have gotten to the place where I developed my own voice. So I understand that in a lot of writers. I just am concerned if you get celebrated too early for that, that you may be lost in identity that's not yours. Yeah.
Because you were a young man, I think, when I first met you in somewhere, I think I met you in the 90s.
We must have, because you were, the reason why I have such a, like, a hard-on for you is because, like...
Wow, put that away.
Well, you know, it's one of those, like, I'm really into you in a way, because, like, since Gate, before so many Asian American anythings ever even considered me as existing, your magazine already was like, hey, that's cool. And you were very supportive of me and embracing of a work that back then, to be honest, people actually who were of Asian descent kind of rejected because it wasn't Asian enough. And I'm not saying everyone, I'm just saying that there are people like that. And that was hard for me to be like, hey, I'm, and then to feel so rejected because I was only 19. Yeah. I was only 19. No, I don't think people realize, like, I wasn't like a 35-year-old man being rejected. I was a 19-year-old leaving Oklahoma and wanting to be embraced finally and then being rejected by people that go through what I go through or have gone through, right? Was hard. So for you to embrace me at that very early stage, I was just like, yeah. Which is why I'm just so open to whatever. You know what I mean? Like, if you're like, hey, why don't you come check out this thing? I'll, like, if I have the time, I'm like, yeah, let's go to that art thing. Why not? You know?
Yeah, you're so bold that you go and eat curry by yourself and then go to art shows by yourself.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, because being alone doesn't mean you're lonely.
No, not at all. That's cool.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to think, too, like, or trying to understand, I guess, when, you know, like, when I see, I guess, pieces that you do, and I see them online, I'm not sure, are those brand new? Especially when their dates are, like, recent. You know what I'm saying? Like, you do something at the Fred Korematsu talk thing. And I'm wondering, is that an old piece? Are you still writing all the time? Or are you writing per project?
Got you.
Or are you just writing like, oh, Saturday morning, I'm going to just write because I feel like it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this like a thing that's like natural? Like, you're just kind of busting stuff out and you've got a laptop full of material? Or is it just kind of like slowly piece by piece? You know, I'm not sure. Some people just ooze tons of text, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go through periods where I won't write at all.
Uh-huh.
6 months.
Oh, that long?
A year.
Oh my gosh, all right.
I'll go through periods where I write 5 hours a day, every day. Fred Korematsu piece, I probably wrote it
in the car
2 or 3 days before the event.
Okay.
Some of the poems I've been asked to recite at my friends' weddings, written the day of.
Uh-huh.
The poems that I have that people have yet to see, you know, probably 2,000-3,000 poems.
There's a lot.
You know, it's kind of like a mixed,
sure,
it's almost
sure
like a mixed bag. I mean, I'm not really good at monetizing and distributing my work.
Right.
I'm just really poor at that.
But if, you know, the YouTube kids are just kind of doing their YouTube videos and throwing it out there every week, they do something, and, you know, that's kind of like one way. I guess you haven't embraced that model, right, where you just release
to that
your own
level.
Stuff.
Yeah,
it seems like everyone else is releasing your stuff. Like, it might be the Comedy Channel that, or whatever it was. Was it Comedy? Def Jam? No, it was Def Jam. It was HBO.
Poetry.
Was it
HBO? Right. Yeah, those videos.
There's HBO,
out
right?
Of Deaf Poetry.
For example,
right.
There's that. Then I think there's probably just fans with a cell phone camera.
At a show, yeah.
At a show that, you know, you're not doing these yourself.
Yeah.
Are you doing any yourself?
I mean, I did a video recently because my friend Iyad is a film director and we wanted to work more together. So we did one recently called Memory Sucks.
Uh-huh.
But that's kind of like in the next year or two. Because like I was saying, I really wanted to work hard on changing or growing up as a person inside so that I could handle all the anonymous criticism. I mean, the thing is, I don't really want to put a lot of videos out there and then not have the fortitude to not take it personally from people, whether they love it or hate it, to not take it too much to heart either way. So I wanted to make sure I developed that, and also I wanted to make sure what I shared was not, like I said, deep down about attention. That's a big problem with me. It's a big problem that as a teenager, I didn't have enough friends. I didn't feel accepted enough. I felt too alone. I felt too hungry for attention that I always will run the risk because of those years of doing things for that. And for me, I'm not saying this is every artist, but me personally, I have to watch that being out there all the time, that it comes from a different place than that. That's all. You know.
That's pretty like self-aware though, in terms of, you know, how you, I don't know if most people even think about all this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, maybe they don't have to. I don't, I mean, who's to say that I'm even like, this is for everyone.
No, it's not.
This is more for me. Like, I need this. Like, I need to know that what I'm doing is for something greater than that. And I have to examine and explore and address that. And thankfully, for some reason, I have the mental capacity and the luxury of time to be able to do that.
So there's no, like, I mean, are you torturing yourself in any way, you think?
I also do that, right? Like, I have to also not beat myself up.
Yeah.
I also have to be like, you're doing good, guy. And be patient and be like, yeah, it's okay. You can make a video. You don't have to overthink it before you do it. You know, I also have to tell myself that. I mean, the thing is...
So you anything, do that a little
for
bit.
For sure.
Okay.
I mean, anything I'm saying, right, is in this balance of other things.
I hope so, but I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Right, right. For sure. How could you know, right?
Yeah. That's because why I'm asking. I'm like, wow, this sounds like... Yeah. There's some danger involved here, possibly.
Yeah, if I was that intense, you know, I'd be mad at myself that I don't work out enough. I can't be like that. I gotta be like, a full life doesn't mean you work out all the time, bro. Relax, sometimes you gotta eat ice cream. Ice cream is important. Like, these are little things that we take for granted, being in a rush to produce for what? You know, so yeah, I'm definitely, they're always in balance with each other. It's just, you know, you realize, oh, this is my life. It ends when I die. So I will always be trying to balance, because life and the world will always be changing. You know? So.
Cool.
Cool.
I think that's good for now.
Yeah, I gotta go. You know, we sign off with our, you know, the Mickey Mouse Club has that song. Remember you said that when we do these podcasts, we're gonna have a song together. That song, well, we're gonna do that. It was a song. It wasn't Eric and Bo. It was, we were going to do like a little melody, like a little jingle. And it was, I forget what it was. It wasn't like, this is we are us. We know what we do, so trust. This is how we build a life. Moment by moment, that's how we thrive. Something like that? Is that what it was?
Yeah, exactly. Wow, I'm mortified. Like, well, at first I thought, who's this other me who accepted that? We're like, wait, we did? Oh, yeah, okay, I remember this. Wow, you had me going for a while.
Yeah, all yeah, right. Yeah, a little scared.
I was like, what?
You were like, oh, I guess I did start smoking pot, and no one told me that day that happened.
Cool. Well, I'm Eric Nakamura, and I'm with Bo Xia at my house, and we're doing our podcast. Thanks a lot for coming. And thanks for listening.
Grazie.